For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
All right, good evening.
Good evening.
I hadn't expected such a crowd, but all right. I'm Douglas Floyd. I'm the temple director at Ancient Dragon Zengate. Taigen is out of town, so he invited me to give a talk. And I thought that I would follow what I do most of the time, but not every time, and talk. Have us talk about a koan. This one, you each have a copy, and we'll read it. It's case number 3 from Mumon Khan. Gute raises a finger. So this is a translation from Japanese, so the names are in Japanese rather than Chinese. Master Gute, whenever he was questioned, just stuck up one finger. At one time, he had a young attendant whom a visitor asked, "What is the Zen your master is teaching?" The boy also stuck up one finger. Hearing of this, Gute cut off the boy's finger with a knife. As the boy ran out screaming with pain, Gute called to him. When the boy turned his head, Gute stuck up his finger. The boy was suddenly enlightened. When Gute was about to die, he said to the assembled monks, "I attained Tenryu's Zen of one finger. I used it all through my life, but could not exhaust it." When he had finished saying this, he died. In Master Mumon's commentary is, the realization of Gute and of the boy attendant are not in the finger. If you really see this, Tenryu, Gute, the boy, and you yourself are all run through with one skewer. And his poem, Gute made a fool of old Tenryu. With a sharp knife, he chastised the boy. Kore raised his hand with no effort, and lo, the great ridge of Mount Ka was split in two. So, this is one of the most important koans based on the number of places it appears. It's not only in Mumon Khan, it's also in the Blue Cliff Record, it's case number 19, and it's in the Book of Serenity, it's case 84. This version, the Mumon Khan version, is longer. The other two are only the first part. Just Master Gute, whenever he was questioned, just stuck up one finger. That's it. So the other, this has two more parts. The story about his Jishai, his attendant who imitates him and has his finger cut off and is enlightened as a result. And then the third part where he's on his deathbed and says, "I've used this one finger Zen all my life but never exhausted it." So those, I think, just carry on a point or the theme in the initial part of the story. You know, I'm not sure why I chose this one. Maybe because it is important. It's also it's important in the tradition. It's also one of those koans that sort of, when the big Zen boom of the 50s and 60s was going on, this was one of the koans that was always referred to as why Zen is so outrageous, and these Zen masters will do anything. They'll chop off young men's fingers, they'll cut cats in two, they shout at you all the time, and they beat you up in order to bring you to enlightenment. And it would go either, "Wow, isn't that cool?" or, "This is absurd, these people are insane, this is completely unacceptable." This last one, especially if you've ever read a book called by Arthur Koestler called The Lotus and the Robot, which was a bestseller for a while in the 1950s. He writes stories about visiting Japan and India to meet religious figures, and he comes away saying, "These people are idiots. This is all sham. It's ridiculous." But, you know, it's you know, it's opaque, I think, sort of, and there's the violence that, you know, it really inspires that kind of, these different reactions. And since the last time I spoke, I talked about Nan Chuan kills the cat, I thought I would continue in this theme of sharp objects in koans. I think the thing to understand about the first part of the koan is, you know, is pretty much explained by Master Mumon, where he says the realization of Gute and the boy attendant are not in the finger. This is not about the finger, right? The finger is not telling you anything. It's not an explanation. It's not a symbol. It's not pointing at anything. You know, in the classic sort of Zen story, they always talk about, well, there's a finger pointing at the moon. Don't mistake the finger for the moon. Okay, the finger here is the moon, right? This is not an explanation. It's a presentation. The point is that he's trying to bring you to awaken to whatever. Master Gute would, in response to any question, you know, what is the way? What is Buddha nature? What is suchness? What is thusness? How should we live? He would raise the finger. That wasn't an attempt at an explanation. It was a demonstration. This is the way. This is part of the world. Bring it down to just the concrete object. The point, or a major point of our practice, right, is that we are ordinarily all caught up in our thinking and emotions, chains of thought that are shaped, driven, and impelled by our insecurity and neediness. And if we can step outside of that or see through that, we can get a glimpse of the this world, but with a different sense. We approach it in a different way. That's all that thusness is. It's when we no longer are coming to the world out of this neediness and insecurity. The world, it's the same world without the sense of our imposing our own needs on it and separating ourselves from the world and seeing everything in our experience in terms of what it can do for us or do to hurt us. So that everything is the object of my fear or longing. So, you know, you have to ask, well, that sounds impossible. I mean, but it's not, really. Thusness is right here. It's very close. It's something that you do all the time. Your zazen is not intended to get you to some future state where you're going to have a great realization of some essence of wholeness or something separate that's behind everything that you see in this room right now. It is so that when you wake up in the middle of that thinking and whirling of your thoughts and emotions, there you are. In this world with other things, engaging with those things, just sitting and breathing, smelling the incense, hearing the sounds of the trucks out front, seeing the bends on either side of me. That's it. For most of it, most of us, and I probably for everyone, then we fairly promptly fall back into the whirling stream of thoughts and hopes and fears and needs. But this awakening is something that we do all the time and that we can do just sitting on the cushion and carrying that into our ordinary lives. And I think that's a little bit the point of part of that, carrying it into your ordinary life is part of the point of this koan. You know, there are plenty of others with sort of a demonstration theme. What is Buddha? It's the oak tree in the courtyard. Right? So the whole point is, bring you here, you see the oak tree, here we are in this moment. With everything in this moment, we see ourselves here, with all the 10,000 things, we're in relationship. It is the whole of all of the 10,000 things in a relationship. But this is a little bit different, right? It's Goethe not saying, look at that over there, or just look at me. He lifts up his finger. There's an attempt to demonstrate what is real and to communicate. I think that's a point that's different from the oak tree in the garden. You know, I think we just finished our spring practice commitment period and did a lot of talking about thusness and Buddha nature, and all things have Buddha nature. Do people have Buddha nature? What does it mean for things, inanimate things, to have Buddha nature? And there is a difference. If everything is Buddha, if everything is real, there's still a difference. People are Buddha, even in their delusion, they're Buddha. But the difference between people and things is, because we have minds and consciousness, we can become deluded about whether we are Buddha or not. A rock doesn't get deluded about it, not enlightened about it. It's just a rock. It's just Buddha. It's just Buddha nature. But we wake up to our delusion, and having waked up, then we are able to act. We can do something, and we can communicate and interact with other things. We can lift our finger. So I think that's the point. Now, that's not really an explanation, right? Because you have to sit on your cushion and do it. It doesn't really... Talking about it is not very helpful. It's not really the point. It's not a philosophy class. But I think that is a very important part of the koan, that even the smallest act performed, awakened act, is an expression of Buddha nature. And that's our real task. It's not waking up to what? It is acting, having stepped outside of our delusion. It's something we have to do, but it's something we can do. So, what about the jisha? I mean, what's the deal with that? I mean, why is this poor young man being abused? I mean, this is, being the Zen master's jisha is a big deal. You know, it's a position of responsibility. It's an honor for a diligent student, and it's the opportunity for the student to hang out almost 24/7 with the teacher, getting to watch how the teacher does everything, perform the chores, you know, help clean up, get stuff for the Zen master, offer the incense, bring the tea, but just to learn by being with the teacher and seeing how the teacher acts moment to moment across the day for a while. It's a position that gets rotated so that other people can learn. But I think to add a little texture to the story, it's helpful to know, or it's interesting to know, that Goethe was not the first Zen master to raise his finger to answer these questions. So when Goethe was a younger man, he had been a monk and spent time in the monastery and was experienced, and he did like other very serious people and said, you know what, 3-month retreats twice a year are not enough for me. I'm going to go build a hut on a mountain and stay there, and I'm going to sit 12 hours a day all year long. So he did. He went up and he became a hermit. And the story is that shortly after nightfall, one night when he was sitting in his hut, an old nun who was traveling, trying to meet Zen teachers, came to the hut. And, you know, it's always these old ladies in Zen who are making fools of the Zen teachers, the men. So she came in, and the usual practice when a traveling monk came someplace and wanted to stay the night and participate in the activities and get the teaching, was you'd knock on the door you take off your traveling pack, you take off your hat, you put your staff right to the right side of the door, and then you'd come in and you'd prostrate three times to the teacher. You'd get asked various questions about who the hell are you, where were you ordained, what's your training, are you legitimate or not? And you'd say, fine, you can stay. The teacher and the monk would bow three more times. But this nun was not interested in that. She was going to be more aggressive. And before she was going to go through that, she wanted to make sure she was dealing with the real deal. So she just came into the hut, didn't take off her hat, didn't take off her pack or put her staff by the door. She did walk three times around Gute, which, you know, is a Buddhist ritual. It's something you do in a sacred space. But she did not bow down. And Gute was pretty stunned. I mean, what kind of treatment is this? And the monk said, the nun said, if you can give me one word of Zen, I'll take off my hat. And Gute just kind of sat there stunned and couldn't say anything. His jaw dropped. He looked like an idiot probably. So she just said, fuck it, and walked off. And he said, wait! It's late. Why don't you spend the night? You can have something to eat. We'll talk in the morning. And she said, if you can give me one word of Zen, I'll stay. And he was still stuck. And so she just said, bah, and walked off. And didn't even stay the night. She had to go sleep outside. So Gute was very depressed. And he'd been made a fool of. He was very embarrassed. And he was also disappointed that obviously he'd been practicing very hard. He couldn't give a word of Zen, couldn't answer questions. So he said, I'm out of here. I have to go find a teacher who's going to teach me the way. And he went to bed, and while he was asleep, the guardian deity for the mountain came to him in his dreams and said, wait, don't leave yet. There's a great bodhisattva who's coming. He'll be here in 10 days. So he woke up in the morning and said, fine, I'm going to wait 10 days. In 10 days, Tenryu, another great Zen teacher in the 9th century, came in, and they bowed, and Gute told the story of the nun. And he said, what is the word of Zen? And Tenryu raised his finger. And at that point, Gute woke up. He opened and became intimate with that moment and with the world. So after that, that was when it started. Right? After that experience, every time anyone asked Gute, what's the meaning of Zen? What is thusness? What is Buddha nature? What is the way? He just raised his finger and didn't say anything. So it's a little interesting that now he has an attendant. He's a big Zen master. And somebody asks his attendant, what is your master's teaching? And the attendant lifts his finger, and Gute's response is to take a knife and chop off his finger. Why does he chop off his finger? He does the same thing that Tenryu did. So anybody want to volunteer an interpretation? Yeah.
He held off his finger, but he didn't have the realization. And in order to really hold up your finger and to give this as a teaching, you have to realize it. It can't be just an imitation.
Yeah, I think that that's clearly part of it, that this, the teaching is something, it's not something you know, it's not an answer you can give, or an explanation or a statement. Oh, everything is Buddha nature, so this finger is Buddha nature, right? Do you understand? Okay, we've got that done, let's go home. So there's that problem. It is just, he's just imitating. And another problem is he thinks that it's like this finger is special, right? The finger is the Buddha nature. Well, everything is the Buddha nature, right? This lectern, the cup of water, Gute, the Jisha, they're all Buddha nature. So he chops off his finger. Now, that's the sort of thing, as I said, that got all these writers very excited. I think Alan Watts always makes a big deal out of it too. And you just have to remember that this is not history, right? These are not biographies. This is literature. It's just like Nan Chuan kills the cat. You know, in the koan literature, over and over again, there's stories about people cleaning things and polishing mirrors, and that's always a symbol for removing delusion and distractions and practicing zazen. And cutting things in koans, it's not the answer, but it's always clearly a matter of cutting through the delusion that this of this is an answer, and this is Buddha nature, and this is not. You know, it's the same, I mean, and cutting and knives have been metaphors in Buddhist literature for a very, very long time. You know, our image of Manjushri on the altar in front of Shakyamuni Buddha does not have a sword, but most images of Manjushri sitting on a lion and he's holding the sword of Prajna that's used to cut through delusions. And another example from very, very early days is in the principal text of Theravada Buddhism, the Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification, where I think it's in the first paragraph, the practice of the way is compared to cutting your way through bamboo thickets with a large knife. So it goes way back. That's the image that you can even use in your zazen if you want. That I'm waking up, I'm cutting through the fog. This is not a historical record, what's happened. That's enough of the attendant, I think. So, I think we've talked a little bit about the commentary, except for, I think it's helpful to look at the Satori, or the awakening of Gute and of the boy attendant are not in the finger. If you really see through this, Tenryu, Gute, the boy, and you yourself are all run through with one skewer. So, right, reality runs through all of us. We are intimately connected. We cannot be detached from each other. Through the 10 directions and the 3 times, we are interconnected and cannot be detached. The idea that there's a Douglas Floyd or a Tenryu or a Jisha on their own is a total abstraction. It's a fiction. So the world of Buddha extends through all of us. It's a continuity. The poem, Gute made a fool of old Tenryu. With a sharp knife, he chastised the boy. Kore raised his hand with no effort, and lo, the great ridge of Mount Ka was split in two. Has anybody got a thought about how Gute made a fool of old Tenryu? I don't think there's anything profound about it. So I think that he's made a fool of old Tenryu, or the joke is, Mumon sort of poking fun a little bit by saying the same thing, that, well, he's no different from his attendant. He's just imitating Tenryu just over and over again. He keeps raising the finger. There's nothing there. Tenryu thought he was awake. He's not. It's one of those things that Mumon likes to do in a number of places in Mumonkan. The last part is completely obscure, and it's one of the problems we have when we read this literature from, 1,100 years ago. We don't, in the West, we come to this literature without the literary allusions and the folklore and the slang from 11th century China that these koans are full of. So the story is about how Mount Ka was restraining the Yellow River, and the god Kore raised his hand and chopped the mountain in two so that the water was able to flow through. So you have, once again, this image of cutting so that what is restrained and enclosed becomes free and unrestrained and living again. So it's the same image that appears over and over again in these koans. That's all I have to say, other than, once again, this is a whole lot of talking. But the point is to sit on your cushion and let your sitting allow you to see through this train of thinking, delusion, emotions that separate us from the world and prevent us from being opening and being intimate with the world and with other people when we engage with it. So, sit on your cushion every day. Not wanting to sit is just one more thing you have to cut through. So, and that's it. Thank you.